It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we begin a Tuesday. Not so super Tuesday. One week away from Election Day.
Yeah, we certainly are. We hope everybody had a good Halloween. And,
very busy in my neighborhood, according to my daughter. I slept through it. But
yeah. I was asleep and I could hear in the neighborhood, but I just turned all my lights off and nobody, comes up to the, nobody comes up to the door, so.
Right, yeah.
It was okay. A little bit jet lagged. I think I had a bug or whatever, and I went to sleep real early, so I woke up early. Mm. I looked at you and I said, I need a cup. Normally, I don't have a cup of coffee when I come in here. I was like, I need a cup of coffee. Yeah. So I'm not tired. It's just jet lag.
Right.
You sleep at different times. That's what happens.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, things are kind of crazy right now, and things are, the daylight is changing. And, of course, we change our clocks this coming weekend. And that's going to be great. Can't wait for that. Always looking forward to
it's this weekend?
It's coming up this weekend. Yeah. Yeah. And then election
night. I'll
be able
to sleep next week.
Next Tuesday. And I was telling you, I just don't, once the polls, it's just, I've got this alarm in my head and it works this way. With anything where things are going to, especially elections, when the polls are going to shut down at a certain time. And so on the East Coast, they'll start shutting down. And that's going to be about the time my body's ready to get up and start analyzing pretty much everything. And I'll probably be a zombie by the time we go on the air at midnight. But it's that time of year when everything starts to shift. And I'm kind of ready for it because it often means that I get more sleep in December, but I don't get it until December for some reason. I go into my winter slumber and get more sleep than I normally do. But we're not there yet.
I'll catch up in the morning before I go out and vote.
Yeah.
In early voting.
Yeah. I plan to go out in the morning. I got a ton of stuff on the schedule. I have to travel a little bit further than I would on election day. The early voting place is a little bit further, but the good news is I have to go by my bank, and it's right across the street from my bank, so it's right there. So.
I have another errand to run, so it's not going to be any problem for me out where I have to go, but it's about 9 miles for me. Hmm. If I wait till election day, it's about 1,000 feet.
Yeah, mine.
It's the elementary school right around the corner. On
mine's actually on the way home. It's between here and my house, and but they don't open at 5 a.m. Unfortunately.
Actually, I should wait till next Tuesday and just go to the school because nobody will be there. In 2020, mm-hmm. there were so many people that voted early voting.
Yeah.
That I went by. My voting. I went by the school. I just said, I wonder what it's going to be like on voting day. This is in 2020 now.
Mm-hmm.
And I live in a Democrat precinct.
Right.
There wasn't one person in line.
Right.
Not one. And yeah. I didn't go vote. I just drove my car and I looked. I could see you could see the doors. You can see right in there. There's nobody there. Nobody went in and out of the door for 10 minutes. Because I stood there and just parked mm-hmm. and just wanted to see what happened. So,
right.
And I hear, early voting's down here, which is really, really interesting. But we got a great show ahead coming up. Biden accuses oil companies of war profiteering, warns that because of that, he will raise gas prices for you.
That's right.
In order to stop it. Elon Musk accuses the Twitter board of deliberately hiding evidence. The Democrats never had a political point with the attacker of Paul Pelosi. They tried to make one. We talked about it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, though, it has backfired. It has come all the way around and backfired after it was released that he is in the country illegally, the attacker. That coming up, Supreme Court looks at affirmative action. Latest polling, pandemic amnesty. The writer at The Atlantic talking about should we just forget about it because everybody made mistakes and just move on. Look, I'm always willing to forgive. I want accountability.
Sure.
So I can always forgive, but I want accountability. So that's, you know, we'll talk about that. The DHS, that's Department of Homeland Security, collaborated with Facebook and Twitter to target disinformation, which means target information.
Right.
We'll tell you about the U.S. diesel supplier who warns businesses to prepare for shortages out there. I think the thing that really got me, because there was as soon as you walked in, you were talking about and I was asleep when it was going on, but you talked about just on social media, all the back and forth of the whole Paul Pelosi attack,
right?
And whether there was a third person in there, and the they going after Elon Musk for promoting conspiracy theories. Yet Politico had it, Chuck Todd had it.
Yeah,
you know, people ran with that story, and
it was kind of what was interesting is it was kind of all over the place on all fronts of what the liberal media, including Politico, had reported initially, and Chuck Todd was on that, and then someone over at MSNBC was pointing the finger at Elon Musk for tweeting or retweeting a link to a story that they said was bogus, but that story had information that actually was similar to the information that Politico and Chuck Todd at MSNBC and NBC had. And so there were a couple of things. It was, all right, was there a third person that answered the door? And then the bigger picture was how the liberal media shaped the narrative to be, oh, well, this is what happens. These are the types of people from January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And see, they're dangerous, they're dangerous, they're dangerous. And then they got into again, trying to shape that. That was pretty much Sunday and then into Monday. And then Monday morning, San Francisco Chronicle does the interview with the woman they say is the former girlfriend of the person they believe is responsible here. And she talked about his mental health issues that he's had, and her words that for about a year he thought he was Jesus, and all these mental health issues that this guy is dealing with. And the liberal media wanted to make this about, you know, this is somebody on the right, when it was clear by Monday morning that was not the case. You couldn't make that case in any direction, and they were still early Monday morning. In the liberal media, a couple of people were still trying to make that case. And so it was, you know, look, you and I try, we don't get in too deep into something where we don't know all the facts. But we do know how things are reported. And when the liberal media and liberals on Capitol Hill start going in one direction, we start raising our eyebrows saying, okay, what is it that you actually know about the person that is responsible for said crime? Well, first of all, the way we started the show yesterday, and it's important to point this out, and you started out by saying, why isn't the home of the Speaker of the House guarded, whether she is there or not?
Right.
Why don't they have security on site for the Speaker of the House? And I agree wholly. That must be something that is, and we've talked about this, I think, in recent years, you look at that. I mean, we were asking about, okay, where was security on Capitol Hill on January 6th and all these, but I was kind of shocked that the Speaker of the House didn't have security at her home, even when she wasn't there.
And the major reason is constitutionally she's third in line.
Yes. And you would
or
protect her.
Technically second in line.
Yeah.
Because the vice president would be first.
Yeah.
She would be second.
Right, right.
And so it's like, well, the security is only there when she's there. Well, then you're saying there's no security if she isn't there. And as I said, so hypothetically, somebody could go in, plant a bomb.
Right.
And nobody's there.
Right. You want to make sure that her residence is secure at all times. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be handled.
Any Speaker of the House, irrespective of their party,
exactly,
is third in line constitutionally. Yep. You want tight security, especially, think about this, in this age of terrorism.
Yeah,
right. You're thinking, well, wait a minute. You're telling me that ISIS, Al Qaeda, whoever, our enemies wouldn't want to take out the Speaker of the House if they had the opportunity to do so?
Right. And then you start dealing with, of course, people with mental health issues or anything else.
Right.
And I, there are a number of threats for a number of reasons. And that's why there absolutely should be her home should be a secure environment at all times.
But as soon as the Democrats came out, and I'm reading headlines here, Biden, quote, people who continue to argue the election was not real are responsible for the attack on Paul Pelosi. Ro Khanna, we need accountability for all the people feeding conspiracy theories that led to the Paul Pelosi attack. NBC's Ben Collins, Paul Pelosi attack is the start of something that gets really bad and how you lose democracy. And it's like, as we stated
going
yesterday,
back to the threat to democracy again. Yeah,
exactly. And it's just like they're desperate. Yeah, they're reaching. People remember. And it was because Republicans are out there saying, when Scalise was shot, we didn't do that. Why are you doing that?
Right.
Because Democrats don't act like you.
Exactly.
Understand that they're desperate. They are constantly in an emotional rage because they can't defend where they stand on the issues. So the only thing that they can do is express emotional rage when they have the opportunity to do so, whether they have the facts to back it up or not. This is not new. Now, the interesting thing is when Bill Malusian from Fox LA came out and said, oh, the suspect is an illegal immigrant.
Right.
Way overstayed. Years. This is one of the examples of people that have overstayed their visas for years.
Right.
Gone. Done. Story over. We won't hear about it again.
Right.
Everybody will be, because as soon as you bring it up, the White House tomorrow is going to be asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you went after Republicans for it, but shouldn't have been in the country to begin with.
Right.
Sorry, you can't win. They weren't winning it anyway because people aren't paying. People are going to go, well, that's somebody who's probably crazy. It's not indicative. People don't buy into that. They never have. They've never bought it. The party attempts to do it. But look, and there's been a number of articles written on it just in the last, and we'll get to some of this here in a little bit. It's the Democrats are now at the point that, well, you care about the wrong things.
Yeah.
You care. The people of this country care about. They're sitting there dismissing your concerns as if your concerns aren't important. Only their concerns.
Right.
It's sort of
right.
the opposite.
Yeah.
It's sort of the
right.
opposite. It's instead of politicians being concerned about what the people are concerned about, they're saying, well, we don't care what you think. These are the important things.
Right.
Climate
yeah.
change.
Yeah.
Race. Saving democracy.
Yeah.
And even a significant portion in their own party is saying, no. No.
No. And, you know, this is, I think this is where this is really going. I saw a couple of things during the day that point to what we have been talking about. In other words, where are voters going, right? One was an interview with someone whose family member is a lifelong young Democrat living in Florida, absolutely backing DeSantis. And her point was, if you've lost a young Democrat, keep in mind, I mean, Florida and Texas are two of the big freedom states. I mean, we kind of joke about it, but, you know, but Florida is not necessarily, there are a lot of transplants in Florida, and it hasn't always been the case that it was I don't know if I would call it right now a solid red state. Maybe you could, at least for the moment. I don't know if it's temporary or not, but DeSantis is getting a ton of support. But her point is that if you lose somebody like that, if you're losing young Democrats, and that's the question, you know, that's anecdotal. To what extent is the voter base young Democrats? Are they staying home this election cycle? Are they done with their party? this is way too crazy. We're not going to let this go. Because then you have to start, because you ask yourself, all right, what is it that appeals to them? What appeals to them quite often is pop culture. It's why the left, up until recently, was all concerned about Hollywood endorsements, pop culture endorsements. What has happened in the recent years, in the recent couple of years, they're the people like Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle are railing against the cancel culture. They may be liberals, but they're spelling out very clearly why you shouldn't support the Democratic Party. And I wonder how much of an effect that has with younger voters.
We have a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold temperatures and water can lead to only one outcome, and ice has no place in a truck's air system. That's why it's absolutely crucial to keep your air system moisture-free as temperatures begin to drop. If a vehicle didn't have an air dryer, the air system would be filled with that water, which can lead to dangerous and costly premature brake failures. To add insult to injury, if it's cold enough, that liquid will freeze, threatening air supply to various systems, including the transmission and suspension. Ice in the air system can also disable the compressor, for example, along with any of the air valves in the system. Make sure your air system is in top condition before plunging temperatures. Put it to the test.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Eric Harley here for a new sponsor, Total Tax, Inc. Total Tax knows how challenging it can be to run your own business. Whether it's just you and your rig on the open road, or if you operate a fleet, Total Tax can help. They've been helping small business owners like you across the USA since 1991 with an experienced and licensed team of financial and tax experts to help keep your business on track and successful. Whether you need help filing back tax returns, resolving taxes you owe, or staying on top of your bookkeeping and current tax returns, think of Total Tax as your business partner providing you with peace of mind while you're on the road. Total Tax is a family-owned business that understands our independent tradesmen are the backbone of America, and they look forward to serving your financial and tax needs so you can keep our country running strong. By providing consistent, personal, dedicated, effective, and ethical service to their clients, Total Tax has sustained an A-plus BBB rating for over three decades. Go to TotalTaxForTruckers.com or call 855-920-4121 today and get a free consultation. That's TotalTaxForTruckers.com. TotalTaxForTruckers.com.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. The coffee machine wasn't working right, and Eric made me a cup of coffee. He went out to fix it, and as he walked back in, he had coffee and cream for me. I feel honored. Thank you so much.
Remember to tip your barista.
Now, wait a minute. Are you going to unionize now?
Are you telling me we're not union?
Are you
Hold on a second. I'm just learning something. Well, that explains a lot.
Did you see that? It just reminded me of it. The barista over the weekend that was on social media that was crying. It was headlined. This may bring it back. It was headlined: transgender barista. Who was talking about the fact that they had to work 8 hours. That they
had to work a whole eight hours.
You know, and here I have to go to school, and I had and crying and everything else. I had to work 8 hours. It's like, whoa, wow.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, geez, that's. And sorry, don't get any sympathy for me. I went to college and worked two jobs. I was working 55 hours a week and loved it, embraced it.
Right.
And I wanted to do it. It's what You know, it's like I was young. It's like sleep, come at a different time. Right, party. Yeah. I had the job as the club DJ. That's when I partied.
I'll fit it in while I'm working.
I was smart. I picked a party job.
That's right. You got paid to party.
Yeah, that was. It's like, we need a union. We need a union because the. It's like, yeah. That's going to be the comeback of unions in the United States at coffee shops.
Right. You know, it's interesting because the article came out last week about Chick-fil-A at one of their stores. They're testing a new work week that would be essentially a three-day work week. But it's not 8 hours a day. Now, the person presenting the story, I think it was at CNBC, I may be wrong on that, said, you know, there's been discussion about the four-day work week for a long time, and what it would be is that you work 4 8-hour days, and then your company gives you a paid day off every week. And I said to myself, no, that's not what it was. It was 4 10-hour days. That's what most companies were looking at. Mm-hmm. Because if people are already working close to 10 hours, then let's see if we can get them some time off. And at Chick-fil-A, they were looking at, well, if they're working 13 or 14 hours, could we give them more time off? And they already have a day off on Sunday, all of them. And so that was an interesting story.
Regime is in place. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So just sitting back here for a moment, we're a week out, okay?
All right.
So we're a week out from the election, and just relax for a moment, sit back, but still, every day that I come in, every day before I start the show, I am constantly in this sense of bizarro, or as I've called it before, perverted sense of awe. And I've said it so much where it's become, I think to myself, wow, you're not adding anything new.
Right.
I'm thinking, well, you can't add anything new if they're not adding anything new. The Democrats don't add anything new. They never sit there and say, okay, here, we're going to hold this new position here. Everything is the same every day, irrespective of what's going on around them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what's going on around
them. Right.
It doesn't matter what the polls say. They simply say, this is what we believe, and we don't care what anybody else believes, and we're just going to go forward with this. No matter how delusional it is, no matter how self-destructive it is. And so I can understand why I and others and you sit there every day and go, I can't believe they're doing this. I can't believe they're doing this. I can't believe they're doing this. And with the attack on Paul Pelosi, the same thing. Immediately it was, this is because Republicans are denying an election. And it's like, well, all you have to do is bring up Steve Scalise.
Yeah.
And his attacker, who said, you know, we absolutely was a Bernie Sanders supporter. Did any Republican blame Bernie Sanders?
No.
No.
No. In fact, when that was addressed, it was about how the left was looking for, again, a category for the shooter. And they were quick to jump on something, and this is what you get with these right-wing crazy people, blah, 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 blah. And it turns out he was a Bernie supporter. And the same thing with Paul Pelosi. The number one concern should be the security of the home of the Speaker of the House, regardless of who the Speaker is, whether it's Nancy Pelosi or, in January, Kevin McCarthy. And if, again, you know, the conversation is always going to jump, see, January 6th. Well, you have no idea that that's the case. And all these things come to the surface. And then, of course, it falls out on Monday that the alleged perpetrator here is in the States illegally and has been for quite some time. As you said, Gary, the conversation is over. Well, for me, it isn't about the political motivation. But when the left makes it, starts with political motivation, that has to be addressed. You can't just let that sit there without it being addressed. So anything we're addressing, just like with the Steve Scalise shooting, anything we're addressing here is in response to what the liberal media and the liberals started with. don't start nothing, won't be nothing. Because for me, I'm not looking to say, well, this person, all right, what can we learn? What can authorities learn from what happened about the type of individual? You know, I think a lot of people were surprised at that game the day that Steve Scalise was shot. And as bad as that was, it could have been a lot worse. And thank goodness Steve Scalise survived. Thank goodness Paul Pelosi survived. But the fact of the matter is you want to learn from every incident. And what can we learn about the individuals that are responsible? What can we learn about their motivation? What do the authorities believe about their motivation and how things are planned? And what can we do about security? And beyond, again, beyond the liberal media pouncing, and they do. They want to turn it into something. They needed to shape, they needed to be shaped by an already existing narrative. And they fall flat quite often in that attempt. And they did again this weekend.
But this is to me, and maybe the, when I just sit back and go, wow, I just can't, every day, I just can't believe this. Covering politics as long as I have professionally and paying attention for a lot longer. It's been really 50 years I've been paying attention to politics.
Yeah,
a half a century.
Yeah.
And I've just never seen anything like this. And they just keep doubling down. There is never any type of contemplation that maybe where we stand on the issues is wrong. It's like, no, you double down, you triple down. I mean, for years upon years upon years upon years of things that have failed them. And one of the things that has failed them is the fact that if somebody goes out and commits a particular heinous act, that it is those, whatever opinions they hold, if one opinion fits what the Republicans think, then it's the Republicans' fault for that person doing it.
Right.
And when the opposite happens, it doesn't go the same way. Republicans don't do that to Democrats. And the public is onto it now. That's why I said yesterday, even it's going nowhere. It's just a pure sign of desperation, and they don't care. And then combine that with, and this got a lot of comment yesterday. I was reading a number of different articles and on social media. You saw this, you know, Chuck Todd with Chris Sununu on, and we had mentioned this yesterday. I think we played part of the audio of that, where he was just saying, well, you support somebody who believes that the election was stolen. He says, you're just going to keep on this. Basically, Sununu said, we're just going to keep on this. The American public doesn't care about that.
Right.
They care about this. They should care about it. Right. They should care about it. This should be more important. And what was the other article that was, it wasn't the Atlantic, but there was another article that was written that talked about, the Democrats. There was actually a guy who wasn't a Republican, but just talking about the fact that Democrats sort of have to understand that they need to be addressing the issues that matter, that the people are actually that concern them. Inflation affects them.
Yeah, right.
Because the response to this reporter in stating that was from other reporters, you know, liberal reporters, was, oh, like, just because the gas price of gas is high today, you ignore the threat to democracy.
Right.
Well, it's just not gas is high today. Gas has been high for a year. Inflation has been high, you know, for a year and a half. It's been affecting people each and every day. You can't sit there and dismiss people's concern and think that's a way to win an election.
Right.
And so, you know, we asked the question, I think it was last week, you know, what when if this goes the way that people believe it's going to go, the pollsters believe it's going to go, you know, and where you see the momentum going, which is the Republicans take the House and the Senate. Will there be any, you know, will any consultants, because both parties have consultants. And if you're in the Democratic Party right now and you're a political consultant, you got to be sitting there telling them, you people are nuts.
Yeah.
You're where you stand on the issues. And we had we had talked about this extensively last week because it's really so important, because with the liberal transgender activist movement that they have embraced to the point of absurdity, where last Thursday, you know, here we are, less than 2 weeks away from an election, and the president is talking to a liberal transgender activist about kids and should they be allowed to perform genital mutilation on themselves without the parental consent. And you look at it, I'm telling you, the Democrat consultants, if they have any anymore, are looking at this going, are you people out of your mind? And then we said, well, let's backtrack on that. Let's go to the first time that the Democrats were in a meeting saying, okay, all right, our new thing is going to be, we're going to say, we all know it's BS. They might have used a different word. We all know it's bull. Mm-hmm. But we're going to sit there and say that a biological male should be competing against a biological female, because if a biological male believes that they're a biological female, then they are. All right, who's in favor of this? I mean, let's workshop this idea to everybody. What do you think? And nobody stood up and said, excuse me, are you out of your freaking minds?
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare of an issue to champion. Because what's lost is the war with the parents. And you're not going to win that war. You're just not going to win that war.
And
we're not talking about transgenders being marginalized on a college campus where they're past the age of 18 or past the age of, you know, 21 or whatever. We're not talking about adults here. We're talking about children. And this idea that you introduce and this cause that you want to champion about genital mutilation and also the education of sexualized material in the classrooms as early as the age of 5, that goes beyond indoctrination. That's flat-out programming.
And then you think about all the other topics on illegal immigration. Nobody ever stood up when it started getting out of control, you know, within a month of Biden putting through his executive order. Where was any Democrat in the Senate? Remember, the Senate, they are the sober part of the bicameral legislature. They are the
upper chamber.
They are the upper chamber. They are the adults. Nobody stood up except border state Democrat Congress people. A couple of them who stood up and said, this is insanity.
Right.
And the party completely ignores them on it. You know there's no way that that's not going to come back to haunt you.
Right.
And so what do you say? No, the border is secure. You just lie about it. And then defund the police.
Right.
Who didn't know where defund the police was going to end up? We said it in the summer of 2020. What are you people out of your mind? This is going to come back. This is going to blow up in your face. What we're going to do is we're going to get rid of the armed police and we're going to have social workers go to domestic disturbances.
That's right.
Yeah, how is that working out? Mm. You knew it was going to be a disaster.
And you saw the political pivot. Early in the year at the State of the Union, Biden pretending like he's a champion. We need to not defund the police. We need to fund them. Well, the far left is looking at that going, what? What are you talking about? This is where I think there is a bigger split than they believe. It used to be that during the primary season, you could go hard left and then you could moderate. Well, all these things were hitting. Inflation was hitting, even early in the year. The rising crime was hitting. The border was coming back at them. Over and over again, they were losing on major issues. And you can't, with the far left, there is no way to moderate with them. What I would like to see is the breakdown of the people on the far left that look at their party and go, yeah, they're just not willing to walk the walk. They're not, because this is what we saw the night McAuliffe lost. We need more radicals running.
The problem is
where the guy who said parents have no place in the classroom isn't radical enough.
Kathy Hochul.
Yeah.
Oh, this increase in crime that Republicans are talking about, they're just making this up. That's a conspiracy theory.
That's a conspiracy theory.
It's really
theory.
Not happening.
Yeah. Yeah, crime isn't on the rise
in
New York, says the governor of New York.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, so every day, especially as we've got into this campaign, and you get closer and closer and closer, and, you know, you and I have really been talking about this since 2018 when the identity politics really just took hold of the Democratic Party, and we said they eventually have to change, and they've just gotten worse and worse and worse and worse, and as we get closer to this election, it's just pure insanity again.
Yeah.
And you know, on inflation last week with the president coming out, well, people are, you know, getting through this because they're not buying regular Raisin Bran, but the generic Raisin Bran. Shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just right. Shut up. I mean, it's just there seems to be no sense. They caused it. Then they claim you shouldn't be concerned about it.
Right.
And then they come up with excuses how it's really not bothering you.
Right.
Remember a couple of months ago. Well, people have their excess savings, so it's not a problem
right.
at this point.
Right. People aren't being affected by it. Come on, they have their generic Raisin Bran and their savings.
Top of the hour news is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Download our Red Eye Radio app today, because if you can't listen to one of our great radio station affiliates overnight live, you can listen when and where you want on your smartphone or your smart speakers.
Yes, and thank you.
So do it today. So, yeah, I mean, I just a week out and I shake my head because you think if because we've done this before. We put on our political consultant hats and you say to yourself, you know, what are the political consultants? And unless everybody inside the Democratic Party, including the consultants that they pay, just say, look, it's easier just to say, yes, this is the right way to go. Just deny that. And maybe this is the advice that the political consultants are saying.
Right. Yeah.
Because look, we can't tell you as political consultants what to do on the issues. We can tell you how to market the issues. So just pretend inflation isn't happening.
Right.
Pretend the border is secure. And if that's the advice that you're giving, well, it's not good advice.
No.
But I was reading Jim Garrity from National Review. This is from last week. But he wrote, I contended that a lot of Democratic candidate and campaign strategists are a lot less smart and shrewd than they think they are. Mm-hmm. And they built their careers by playing the game on easy mode, protected and saved by a largely friendly media.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how often Democratic candidates and campaign strategists interact with people who don't normally vote for them or their clients. I realize genuinely undecided centrist, independent, or persuadable voters are rarer than they used to be, but the overwhelming majority of Americans actually don't follow politics and aren't that gung-ho with enthusiasm about either party. It's surprisingly easy for the politically passionate to get trapped in a bubble of like-minded friends, colleagues, and acquaintances. This goes back to Chuck Todd, on with Chris Sununu on Sunday when he said, you keep pounding on democracy is going to end. The American public doesn't buy that.
Right.
And well, they should. They should. No, they care about. See, you don't seem to understand. And this is, you know, hey, when you make millions of dollars, does inflation really affect you like it does the average person? And so you've seen this coming from the Democratic Party that, well, what you're concerned about isn't important. Stop worrying about that. Democracy is at peril. You care that gas prices are up? You care that food prices are up? You should care about the fact that democracy is ending.
Mm-hmm.
Well, democracy isn't ending.
No.
And most people know that. But it says most of the Democratic campaigns desperately needed to hear from someone who would say something like, abortion isn't a top issue for me this year. I feel really squeezed by inflation, particularly by grocery prices and the high cost of gas for the past year. President Biden said this was going to be temporary, and it's been going on for more than a year. I'm starting to think the president doesn't know what he's talking about. I want a secure border. I don't understand why Democrats say the border is secure when everyone can see that it is not. I'm really worried about crime. It seems to be getting worse, and I don't understand why anyone would want fewer cops on the streets instead of more right now. I'm not comfortable with all the sexual stuff they're teaching in schools these days. No, I haven't watched the hearings about January 6th. What happened that day was awful, but I haven't thought about that in a long time. I really don't care about what Donald Trump is doing right now. Maybe I'll think about him more if he runs for president next year. Most Democratic campaigns have been running as if an overwhelming majority of the electorate are members of NARL, the pro-choice movement, MoveOn.org, the Sierra Club, the Human Rights Campaign, and Every Town for Gun Safety. Yes, motivating your base is important, but at some point, you run out of Democrats, especially in purple districts. And we now see what happens when Democrats run a base-focused campaign for most of the year. They end up spending millions in an open seat race in Rhode Island, where Biden won by 13 points in 2020. Pollster Stanley Greenberg has been trying to warn Democrats that when they brag about how much legislation they passed and how great those bills are, they sound like they have no idea what kinds of real-life problems voters are facing. In memos, private communications, and interviews, Greenberg has been imploring the party, let's put this bluntly, shut the hell up about all the work it's done. It's not that voters don't care. He said voters actively turn against Democrats when they hear about it. It is our worst performing message. Remember the whole thing with, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act?
Right.
The American public thinks this is working against you. When you tell them how hard you're working and what you're doing, and you know why? Because people have realized when you say you're working hard, you're working against their best self-interest. What you pass isn't good for America, isn't good for them. It's making the situation worse. He said, it's our worst performing message, Greenberg told West Wing Playbook. I've tested it. I did Biden's exact words, his exact speech. And that's the test where we lost all of our leads. It said to the voters that this election is about my accomplishments as a leader and not about the challenges you're experiencing. Think about it. The story of 2022 midterms is a story of a fire of voter anger at incumbents over the state of the country, and Democrat candidates' decisions are pouring more and more gasoline onto that fire.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about how they just aren't connecting at all. Nobody in the administration, nobody in the Democratic Party is connecting. Quit saying recession because you're going to talk us into a recession. The problem is people are talking. And if they keep saying things, then those things will come true. What? There is no inflation. Inflation is transitory. Well, we don't see it getting much worse. Well, we know it's bad, but you have your savings. All right, we know you've gone through your savings, but you've got generic Raisin Bran. These are the things where they, and again, this is the dismissive arrogance of this administration. You know, we talked about how bad Jean-Pierre is, but she's actually a perfect match in terms of her behavior and her arrogance in her role. She acts just like the president does. What's wrong with you? You can't see it? There's no problem here. As I've said, thank you for asking, but, and it's this arrogance over and over again where the average person, again, as we pointed out, and it's pointed out here, they don't follow all of these wonkish numbers every day. The numbers they're following are the ones they're trying to keep up with in their own household budget, which is, do I pay the rent or the car payment? Do I get groceries this week or not?
The key numbers that I've seen is not the individual races that we've talked about. The key numbers, I think the two key numbers that have come out over the last month is that 7 out of 10 people are looking for more hours to make more money.
Yeah.
And the poll that was out the other day were 8 out of 10, the CBS poll, 8 out of 10 Americans believe the country is out of control.
Yeah. Right.
Those are the two things right there. Now, that was a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, where that study or that survey came out. 7 out of 10 Americans are looking to work more hours.
Hmm.
And then 8 out of 10 believe it's out of control.
Yeah.
Those numbers, and to ignore those numbers, of Democrats have done, pretend they don't exist, or say there's easy solutions. Oh, just buy the generic form of Raisin Bran is completely, I mean, you talk about out of touch with the American people. You talk about the average person looking at you go, why, you elitist?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have these problems. And you're saying, oh, just buy the people are just buying the generic brands and they're okay. Or what Yellen was on and also the Fed chair. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, this goes back about 3-4 months ago. Well, inflation really isn't affecting everybody because people really have their excess savings.
Right.
There's excess savings that they have here, so people are okay.
Right.
I mean, it's just so it's so tone deaf.
High gas prices aren't a problem when you drive an EV like me.
Yeah. We're saving you money. If you've got $60,000 to buy an electric vehicle, we'll save you a couple thousand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so tone deaf.
And make sure you finance that because the rates are going through the roof.
Yeah, could you finance that, please?
Yeah.
The increase in financing probably washes out the $7,500 over the life of the loan.
Yeah, I'd be interested in looking at that, but it could be depending on the length of the loan. Yeah.
Let's go to Charlie in Chattanooga. Charlie, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good evening. How y'all doing?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
All right. Well, I would if I was a Democrat advisor, I would tell them not to worry because your opposing party has had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House since 1995, 64% of the time, and has done nothing to protect the border, has done nothing to make sure that there's plenty of refineries, has not passed any legislation.
Actually, they've done quite a bit, but the problem is if you do that through executive action, then you're going to have that reversed by the next executive administration is going to do that with their executive action. They're going to reverse that.
But you're talking about the Republicans in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the Senate, both. I mean, Mitch McConnell.
Well, that's Congress. Senate is Congress.
Right. Well, I'm talking about, you know, Senate, Congress, both. You look at whether it's Boehner or whoever, the Republican Party is who we should be blaming for where we're at. Not to look at firing the Democrats and just feeling good about it, because that's what's going to happen in 2022. We're going to fire.
Well, I mean, yeah, look, you look at it. You can talk about when they're in power, because we've been complaining about the spending of Republicans. But Republicans, the rank and file Republicans, haven't complained about spending. After Trump, when Trump ran for office and Trump said we should borrow trillions of dollars at low interest rates, after the whole Boehner situation when Paul Ryan came in, and he came out and said we should borrow trillions of dollars because the interest rates are low, all of a sudden you did not hear Republicans complaining about debt anymore. And we sat here and we saw it visibly by the response when we would talk about debt, that Republicans were no longer concerned about debt. When the Democrats passed, for example, Obamacare, the Republicans didn't fully repeal Obamacare. Why? Because their own polling showed them Republicans like the free stuff. So the Republican leadership in a significant portion of time was a significant portion of the time was responding to what the Republican base was telling them. We don't want the mandates from Obamacare, but we like the free stuff too.
Well, the other thing is when, like, this country's been set back 20 years in the last two. So we're going to turn it over to the Republicans, and I guarantee you they're not going to set fire to $7 trillion and suddenly fix inflation. They're not going to do anything.
They're limited in what they can do in the next 2 years because they don't have a veto-proof majority.
When's the last time they passed a budget? Did they ever pass a budget, or did they do continuing resolutions? The true power of this country is where the money's spent.
Right.
And the Republicans are the worst at it.
No, they're not.
No, not by far.
No, you can't make that case.
No.
You can't make that case.
They're not great at it. They're not the worst at it. No. Not even close, Charlie.
Democrats.
That's absolutely false.
Yeah, that's false. Democrats would spend.
Yeah.
We know what Democrats would spend. We know that they wanted to spend, if it wasn't for Manchin and not one Republican voting for it, they probably would have spent $6 trillion more dollars over the last couple of years.
Yep.
And inflation would have been a lot worse.
Yep.
Democrats have spent more than they should have, but they haven't spent close to what Democrats have spent and would spend.
Right. Yeah, the Republicans haven't come close to what the Democrats have spent. They're not great, but they're not even close to what by far the Democrats outweigh the Republicans in spending.
Thanks for your call, Charlie. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on transport security. Each year, thousands of drivers are injured and millions of dollars are lost in thefts and robberies. The key to staying safe is recognizing and avoiding potentially harmful situations before they occur. Well-thought-out trip planning and communication between the carrier and the shipper can assist in recognizing and avoiding these potentially harmful situations. Before getting started each day, have a plan in place. Take time to map out 2 or 3 safe locations for each rest or refueling stop. Also, make note of other locations where it is safe to pull off in case you need to stop unexpectedly or your first choices are unavailable. Communication between the carrier and shipper is also essential. Both parties should be aware of who is picking up a load, including the name of the driver, as well as the carrier-assigned identification numbers of the tractor and trailer. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by Pilot Flying J and by Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
If you like listening to Red Eye On Demand, we have more of Eric Harley and guests for you. Download RER's Extra Mile podcast. More topics and issues discussed.
Every day, pro drivers keep our country moving forward. And this month at Pilot Flying J, we're...
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Methinks the last caller might have been a Democrat, because when you say the Republicans are the worst when it comes to spending, it's like, okay, that sort of stretches any boundaries of reality of looking at where the Democrats are. But look, the Republicans, if they get into power, it's going to be tough. They have to make the case, and they have to pass legislation that will go to the president's desk that he will refuse. I was thinking about this yesterday, and so actually Charlie Culling made me go back to a thought I had yesterday. One of the first things a Republican should do is say we need to have a national energy plan to open up whatever we can to ensure. There wouldn't be a better time to do that than January in the House, especially if they're the House and the Senate,
right,
to pass where we need to and have the president veto that.
Yep.
And that's what you have to do. You have to you have to take bills that you know are the five or six things that we talk about that are all that people are concerned about, and that's what you focus on, and that's how you have to run over the next couple of years. The thing for everybody is now, though, whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, if you spend the money, you're going to have high interest rates for a while. They're not going to go away for a while. If the Democrats are in power and they have, as we have seen, except for Manchin, if Manchin wasn't there, if they had 53 or 54 in the House, probably you would have $6 trillion more. Excuse me, because I have to back off. Another $4 trillion in spending. I have to realize that they did spend part of that. Right. And you would have another $4 to $5 trillion in spending. Inflation would even be worse. They don't care.
No.
They want to spend more. Biden wants to spend more money now.
Yeah, you're fine with inflation because you can get generic Raisin Bran. Those responses to the questions tell you they absolutely don't care that you're suffering through inflation.
We are at the point where we're at the point where spending is no longer abstract.
Right.
There is a reality to it. Debt spending and debt creation is the reason that we have spending, debt creation, Fed policy to buy the debt. It's all based on the spending and the debt is what has gotten us in the position that we are in today.
Yeah.
You can only get out of it one way. Yeah. Does either party have the guts to do it?
Mm.
Fall is in the air, and that means fall grilling with cookouts, tailgate parties, and so much.
The de-development of conservative talk. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, we've talked about this before. If the Republicans take over, or whoever has control of Congress over the next couple of years, you know, we have talked about the problem with debt for as long as we've been talk show hosts. Mm-hmm. And as recently as 6 months ago, we had people that would call, that listen to our show, would call our show and say, you guys are making, and we get emails, you guys are making too much of the debt.
The things
that you guys do, you're making too. And we said, no, we're not. It's eventually going to come back, and we're eventually going to get hit by it. And that's what's happening right now. The Fed lowered interest rates and manipulated the dollar and had interest rates really since 2008, 2009, except for an increase that they had, what was it, 2013 maybe, 2014? I can't remember exactly when it was. Rates have been near zero.
Yeah.
Right. That's not normal. That's not normal market rates of what, you know, money, you know, should be lent for in any way. The standard was set for one reason and one reason only. Well, maybe for a number of reasons, but one of the major reasons. So the Fed could print money and buy our own debt. So we printed money to buy our own debt, which, again, is inflationary.
Yeah.
Because you're adding more currency, not based on the goods and services produced in an economy.
Right.
So you had that, number one. And then the massive spending that was done during COVID, you can't do that. You can't have that many dollars chasing too few goods. And that's what happens. You put massive amounts of money in, and the Democrats wanted to spend more. So now we're at the point where inflation could last a significant period of time. And the other problem is, since interest rates now, what did you say? What were you telling me before we went on the air?
The 30-year is right at about 7.2 on a 30-year mortgage.
And you said, what did you say about a 10-year?
A 10-year is at 6.6.
Wow.
That's not much of a discount.
No, that's not at all.
I mean, typically you'd see, I don't know, at least a full point, if not a couple of full points in a discount.
And we have talked about the, you know, Yellen this week, oh, we're concerned now about Treasury bonds because and Treasury bills and Treasury bonds because now we're going to have to pay a heck of a lot more interest, on the debt. Well, duh. And this is where we knew it was all going to head.
Yeah.
Nobody seemed concerned about it.
Right.
And you know, we've been stating this for the longest time. You're eventually going to have, you can manipulate the dollar, you can manipulate an economy, but you cannot change economics. Impossible to do that. It's like gravity. You can't change it. And that's what we're finding out right now. And so now, you know, we were paying, what, $200 billion on the debt every year? Mm. Who knows what it might be 2 or 3 years from now? I don't even know what it's projected to be this year. I know over, what, $400 to $500 billion or even more.
Right, yeah.
And the more we continue to spend, the more that takes out of the budget because you have to pay the debt. And so unless you increase the budget by that amount, which again then becomes inflationary because you need to borrow that because nobody's going to raise taxes. Mm. And you get into this cycle that you just can't stop.
Yeah, that's at some point, it's inevitable. We'll get to that, level of not being able to service the interest on the debt.
And at the minimum, what Republicans will see if they, let's say in 2024, they take it over, or even in negotiations with Biden, if they win the House and the Senate. Well, wait a minute. Because the debt has gone up $300 billion, that we can't cut all these programs, we need to have $300 billion more in there.
Right.
Well, who wants to be the party that starts cutting things in the budget? You know, we have a public, for the most part, that is sick and tired of inflation, but wishes, in my humble opinion, for the government to continue to spend just without the inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Have the magic wand and just go. Well, you can't do that. You have to cut spending.
Yeah. And
you have or you have to not spend more. You know, remember the penny plan?
Right.
The whole penny plan, you just cut by 1%. Well, just stay even. But see, if you stay even, you're still cutting majorly because the interest rate has skyrocketed.
Right.
Because of inflation. So if you say, well, we need the same amount, well, it's very easy. If you're paying $1,000 a month for all of your bills, and a lot of your bills have interest rates and it's variable interest, and the interest rate goes from 1% to 50%, and I say that because when you look at what the interest rate was, 0.00, what was it, 0.01, I think it was, for some Treasury bills, and now they're up to 5%. Well, you figure how many times. I mean, some of the interest rates, depending on what bill you're buying, 57 times greater.
Yep.
So you put yourself in that position where you're spending $1,000 a month, and $200 of it is in interest, and all of a sudden $500 of it becomes interest.
Well, and again, where's the call by the rank and file in this country to cut back, to address this?
And so I don't know if anyone has the political courage to do it, because every single Republican and Democrat will look at it and say, if we cut, we're gone.
Yeah. And, well, here's the thing. It used to be that if you were running for office, running for re-election, you could introduce these things and say, okay, this is a problem, and here's why it's a problem, and here's what we need to do about it. But at the basis of that, you had your rank and file, your constituents, saying, your voter base, saying, we've got to do something about this. No one is going to introduce anything as long as no one is screaming at them to solve the issue. And virtually nobody is. I don't know when, I mean, conservatives, we bring it up a lot. But is it a mainstream issue?
No.
Nope, hasn't been for a while.
Nope.
And until it is, you won't see anybody on Capitol Hill step to a podium and say, this is our plan.
The consequences is a mainstream issue.
Yeah, sure.
But what do you do to solve it?
Right. I mean, because it still is for people, in their mind, an abstract idea. Our audience notwithstanding, you got a lot of people that look at that and go, yeah, but, you know, we've had national debt for a long time. Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, but until something starts to change. You know, we've known forever that spending, printing money, leads to inflation. But this generation hasn't seen it jump like it did, because we haven't seen spending jump like it did. And so when we cranked up the flames on that stove, now you could look and go, oh, wow. Yeah, no, that's going to burn if I touch that. When it comes to the national debt, well, everybody is, you know, you hear about it here and there, but until you see the consequences start falling and say, and show people, this is why this is happening. And it's way too late then. Because by then, we won't be talking about a 1% haircut across the board. You'll have programs that just absolutely go away. And where will the priority be? There's the scary question. National defense? Well, that should get a priority, right? We should secure our borders. That should get a part of, if you think about it, the umbrella of national defense. That should all be a priority, but will it be?
Social Security and Medicare?
Is that going to be a priority? Because once the cuts have to happen, then everybody's like, no, because we're still in that mode. Well, don't cut my school lunch program, not my kid's school. I mean, cut it where it's being wasted. Cut the other programs where there's a lot of fat. Don't cut the programs I want. 2016 Republican Party, we're gonna do away with Obamacare. It's going to be done once and for all. 2017 GOP, oh, you guys are telling us you don't really want it to be gone, to the last caller.
Yeah, you like the free stuff.
You like the free stuff. You just don't like the mandates and paying for it. And so you're stuck in this political conundrum. You want to really roll that back and say, because this is where it gets to, you know, the Republican Party and what they have been able to achieve. This may be useful to that caller. And really, the only thing they've been able to do over time in modern times is tap the brakes with welfare reform. Did they really roll back spending? Well, no. They just tapped the brakes. And why is that? Because the people of this country politically would not let a massive cut in spending happen. As you mentioned, just going even 1 year. Flat. Well, flat is a cut because of inflation.
Yeah,
because you can't change that. Yeah. And no, we're not going to allow that. Well, then what do we do?
By the way, you make a great point, because let's add on to it. It's if you stay even, those are the same dollars that you were spending a year ago
right.
when inflation was 8% less.
Right.
So you have inflation, plus you have the interest on the debt
mm-hmm.
that has skyrocketed. So you have a combination of the inflation and the debt. So if you stay even, you've still got to have massive cuts
exactly.
in a budget.
Right. That's a cut. That's a significant cut yeah. that people are going to notice and feel. Don't you dare. So politically, how do you get that done?
And then you talk about, well, we need to grow the economy like Reagan did. Grow the economy, grow mm-hmm. the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get the workers to grow an economy?
Right. You're going to have the manpower. If they came in and Republicans were able to convince Americans that long-term, this is going to have to be the plan, a long-term energy plan done on Capitol Hill, signed into law by the executive branch, which you would have to wait until January 25 to get it done, but you would push toward that. And imagine you got that done. Well, where do you get the manpower? It's
because,
too hard.
Because
I worked 8 right. hours at the coffee yeah. shop
because we had,
and I'm going to school.
Because of illegal immigration, the public doesn't want legal immigration.
Exactly.
And if you're going to have 3% growth, or consistent 2.5 to 3% growth, you need more workers.
Yep.
But because of illegal immigration and open borders that the Democrats have promoted, the majority of Americans don't want legal immigration
right.
to increase drastically
right.
because of the declining birth rate.
And there will still be that thought in the minds of people that let's say we increased work visas. Well, no, Americans should be getting the job. Well, but there aren't Americans to work those jobs, which is why you would increase the visas. Yeah, but it's wrong that Americans aren't, you know, we have some Americans that are unemployed and we're giving people that aren't Americans jobs. Well, when nobody will do the job, don't you dare say, I know people that will. And there's the conundrum.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome. And good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. We appreciate it. Just reading the article, a couple of articles out there about the writer from the Atlantic, Emily Oster, who said we should have pandemic amnesty because there's so much that we didn't know early on.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. No, I think there should be an investigation to what
yeah.
we knew and what we did not
yep.
know before
yep.
you make that decision.
Yeah.
Let's find out what they did and what they did not know.
It's funny how she writes this just days before Republicans are expected to take at least the House. Well, no. Amnesty. Uh-huh. Yeah. Nope. I think we do a thorough investigation as to everything. All of it.
Well, of course, there has to be an analysis when you shut down a country, when you shut down the
yep.
world.
Yep.
For over a year, closer to 2 years, yeah, you need to investigate everything.
Absolutely.
You need to go over everything and say, did we do the right thing?
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we're Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when you want. If you can't listen live overnight to one of our great radio stations, you can listen when and where you choose on your smartphone and your smart speakers. All right, so here's a headline. Biden accuses oil companies of war profiteering as he warns of an excess profit tax.
Uh-huh.
Windfall profit tax. So, here it is. Biden accuses the oil companies of making too much money and threatens to tax them on the excess profits, which means they will raise gasoline prices.
Right.
Mm-hmm. God, geez. Remember Obama did this?
Oh, yeah.
Obama ran on that. Remember, he ran on that in 2008.
Yep. And Biden thinks this is going to be, I guess, a last minute.
I don't know.
By the way, I mean, you look at it and you say, well, wait a minute. Gas prices are lower than when you went into office. I know this because you told me this just the other day. I thought that doesn't make any sense. Now you want to go after big oil because what? What happened? I'm confused, Mr. Biden. Maybe you and your clear-minded administration can straighten things out for me.
Yeah, as we all know, the world oil price is not set by oil companies.
Right.
So, and as the most of the people that sell gasoline are unrelated to the oil companies also.
Right, the oil companies have very little ownership in retail.
Right. And so they're, so who are you going to go after? I mean, it's actually dumb because I think it was maybe I forgot who it was, a National Review said, okay, so how much profit should they make? And is Congress going to start judging, you know, how much profit a particular company should make before you tax them something? And if you start with oil companies, well, then let's look at other companies out there. Should we go after cigarette companies? Should we go after soda pop?
Right.
Companies. Should we go after bottled water companies?
Well, I
for
mean,
what they make
for the retailers. I mean, if you're going to go after, and you know, these gas station owners, and he did this over the summer. You know, you need to lower the prices. Do it now. Do it now. Well, okay, gasoline. But let's talk about the margin on a bottle of water. Gee, they charge me $2 for a bottle of water. I can go get a whole case of that water for like $6 at Walmart. What is going on? I demand answers. The American people deserve answers.
It's water, for God's sake.
It's water. We need water. They shouldn't be able to charge for water. Humans can't go without water.
We need water to sustain our precious bodily fluids.
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. I'm sorry. That was...
Wait, what?
I'm sorry. I was relating to that the movie.
Yeah. This is what we need to do. Let's start with this. An investigation into everything on the shelves at retail. You remember they tried that over the summer? We want to know why these companies are overcharging you. We're going to get to the bottom of it a week later. Inflation's not a problem. Look, generic raisin brand,
by the way,
money in your savings and whatnot.
By the way, my reference to precious bodily fluids came from Dr. Strangelove, the movie, just so people understand.
Oh,
that one. Yeah.
Yeehaw!
Yeah, that's where it came from.
Yeah, all right. And so,
when he only drinks, what is it, the demineralized water. I can't think of the name. What do you call it? In Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yeah.
you can't think of it either.
It's what is it? Filtered water? Not filtered water.
They call it demineralized water.
Yeah. All right. Demineralized. We'll stick with that.
Which is distilled.
Distilled. Yeah. I know people who only drink from a still. This is, I think, the beginning. This is where we find all the answers. Why are we paying so much? Oh, by the way, how's it going with all you guys that were going to work on the pipeline? Have you learned to code yet? Need to learn to code.
It's just a mess.
No, it's it really is a it's exactly what we said it was last week, and you know, I'll say it again. It's scrambling. They're in panic mode. Just throw anything and everything out. They're hoping this is going to stick. Something, one of these things, is going to stick with the last minute voter. You know, but the person who makes their decision last minute. That the and I wonder. By the way, Byron York, we had the article the other night. Pretty much touched on it, but I wonder how many undecideds there really are right now. I mean, I think right now it's more of, am I going to vote or am I going to just stay home? There might be some of that going on. I don't know how many undecideds there might be a week out. And in this particular election cycle, I wonder how many undecideds there really are. And, you know, the desperate attempts. You know what's telling? Somebody else did the story. I got to go back and see who it was. We touched on it. The president basically staying away, not campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be by design, because you don't want, because everything, if you look at Pennsylvania right now, Georgia, they're clearly worried about. Pennsylvania, they've got to be worried about. Now, my gosh. Washington State, they're worried about. Possibly New Hampshire.
Well, I thought it was humorous with Obama out there now. It's like, and they were, there was an article I was reading the other day talking about the Democrat operatives. Oh, this is great because nobody has ever been done. Nobody cares about Obama.
Nobody.
Trying to make, people don't remember Obama when he came in 2008, the excitement, and he still creates that excitement today. No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. He really doesn't.
There was create any excitement.
There was no buzz about that at all.
None.
And, you know, it was some of the, you know, the quotes that I was reading from him. It was the same old game. And the thing is that you can't just point across the aisle right now, because the problems, as we pointed out, really aren't the Republican Party. It's what the Democratic Party stands for, has implemented, and is trying to implement. All of these things are about the Democratic Party and the damage they've done to their own party.
To their own party. And when you look at it, because that's the, and we've been, you've been on this for the longest time. And maybe I say you, I'm sure I have been, but I hear you all the time saying it. It's not about the Republicans. Like, it wasn't about DeSantis.
Right.
This wasn't Disney versus DeSantis.
Right.
It was Disney versus the parents.
Yep.
It's not the Democratic Party versus a Republican Party. It's the Democratic Party on the liberal transgender activist movement and what they are doing in schools against the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republican Party, and that's actually the beauty of, if you look at it purely from a political standpoint for Republicans, they're probably saying, we're out of this, really. If you look, who are the people that are most affected right now? The people that are most affected by the Democratic policies of high crime and inflation.
That's the lower and middle class.
Massive Democrat cities.
Yep.
The Democrat policies have hurt. They haven't hurt the rich. They haven't hurt the upper middle class as much as they have hurt, or the middle class. I'm not saying haven't been hurt, but who has been hurt the most of all the policies are people, vast majorities of minorities in the inner city with inflation and crime.
Yeah, right.
And fentanyl.
Yeah.
From the borders.
Yep.
Those massive areas, when you take those three together, inflation, defund the police, border control, and fentanyl have been hurt more. The Democrats have hurt their base more than they have any other demographic in the United States.
Yep. And I'll tell you the one thing right now that is getting a ton of attention that really has ramped up, and something, and I kind of, at times I can use my father as kind of a, you know, I guess a ground check. Because the conversations we've had two weekends in a row, and the fentanyl thing is really hitting hard with him because he was law enforcement in the Air Force, and he talked about, you know, in our conversations about how, you know, things were different back then, and now it's you really don't know where the fentanyl is. It could be in any other drug. It can be hidden, and it could be a tiny amount that kills a person. And it may not be a drug addict. It may not be somebody mm-hmm. who you think of as being, you know, strung out on heroin or something. It may be somebody who is a casual drug user. And it can happen, boom, with their first event with fentanyl. And this is, you know, something that, because the local stories, we talked about this, about the election in general, but when it comes to crime, when it came to the buses showing up with immigrants in major blue cities, you're not going to shut down the media in those towns. The local news is going to focus on these things, including fentanyl, and every time there's a tragic death, then people are asking, what is going on? What is happening? How does this happen? And these are all things that, again, at the Democratic Party, when you ask them for answers, they get arrogant about it. It doesn't matter what it is. They don't want to address high crime at all. They don't want to address inflation. They don't want to address. And by the way, we can throw in, because you asked the question, well, who does this affect? You know, when we talk about inflation, the lower and the middle class, but also a demographic that has been key to them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And that is young people, because young people aren't at the top of their earnings game yet. If they're in their mid to late 20s, in their 30s, they're likely not at the top of their earnings game. And so they're being hit hard because they fall in that lower to middle class category. But that category, that demographic, is key for the Democratic Party. There has been zero energy from those voters this election cycle. And I mean none. There is nothing that's resonating.
Yeah, where are the, and with this midterm, where are the rock stars?
Where are the endorsements? Where are the celebrities, honestly? And I mean, they would come out and, okay, fair enough, not so much during midterms, but at times they would. Mm-hmm. And especially when people like Beto, and I know Beto's running for governor, this time not the Senate like he was during, you know, his race against Ted Cruz in Texas. But this is, these are things where you would see that energy would resonate. It's not resonating with that young crowd. And so they do one of two things. They vote differently or they stay home if they're not happy with their party.
Now, you did have Will Ferrell come out and support Beto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually thought that was a bit. I thought that was something that he's going to put this on one of the comedy channels or something.
And what's his name? Mark Ruffalo has, mm-hmm. Gone after Lee Zeldin.
Yeah. Well, and of course, Mark Ruffalo doesn't stop campaigning against conservatives, right?
Telling him to frack off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What a nutcase. Seriously, genius. What an intellectual lightweight. I mean, yeah. There are some people in Hollywood that you can look at and say, okay, they made a point. This guy's mm-hmm. just such an intellectual lightweight.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think there's a great frustration in those that typically that are the mainstays. And I would say Mark Ruffalo,
yeah,
he's always out there, you know, campaigning for Democrats. But that frustration with their own party, knowing they're not going to perform. Hochul might, you know, I mean, there's a decent chance Hochul wins. But why does he have to come out this late in the game, this close to election? Why is it? Why
they're
is
worried.
There? Because they are worried in New York. They're worried in Washington State. Patty Murray is, they're concerned about that state. RCP throwing that into toss-up now. They're worried. I don't know how it's going to go. It's impossible to predict exactly how it's going to go. But it has the potential of being a very bad day 1 week from today for the Democratic Party.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, you know, when Biden talks about a windfall profit tax, the interesting thing is it's the same thing as we remember when Obama was campaigning in 2008. Why? Because we don't live in the bubble of today. We have memories.
Uh-huh.
And we believe it was down in Houston where Obama was doing a doing a rally. Mm. And he said, are you sick and tired of gas prices being high? Everybody, yay, you know, we're sick of gas prices being high, yeah. Do you want me to lower gas prices? Yay! Well, if I become president, I will put in a windfall profit tax. Yay! And we said, what idiots. He just told them, I'm going to raise your gasoline prices.
Right.
Because Biden, the same thing here. He talks windfall profit tax. Mm. Whatever that means.
Right.
Congress will say, okay, if you make this much of a profit, if you make this much of a profit, then we're going to tax that.
Yeah, we want our cut.
Right. And it's like, okay, so we give you your cut. We raise the price of gasoline.
Hmm.
In order to make up what we're losing, we're going to raise the price of gasoline because other countries aren't putting a windfall profit tax on their oil.
Right. Yeah,
and so therefore it becomes a disadvantage. So we need to raise the prices here to become competitive with the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's very simple. Companies, corporations, industry as a whole, they don't pay taxes. The consumer does. That's the way it works.
But this is such an old. They've been doing this for years. That's the thing that really. We started this whole thing by. We're just amazed that we're a week out, and they're using the exact same strategies that they use for such a long time that has never worked for them.
And
now they've even gone beyond that, which is just, oh, you're not really feeling inflation.
Right.
A couple of months ago was, you have excess savings, so you're okay there. Last week was, don't worry, you can eat generic the generic brand of Raisin Bran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we're going to tax the oil companies here. Yeah. But you brought a great point. Last week he said, oil prices are the lowest they've been since I've become president.
Yeah.
What? They're making too much of a profit. We need to tax them. Why? If gas prices are lower.
I'm confused.
Because
they've gone down. You want to tax them because they've gone down since you've taken office? What happened? Huh?
Oh, man. It's just crazy.
And get a word in edgewise. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. It was interesting reading, got a little bit into the minutiae, legal minutiae yesterday. Jonathan Turley, as he was following the Supreme Court, looking at affirmative action for University of North Carolina and Harvard, I guess it was.
Right.
I didn't know.
Hmm.
9 states have already ended consideration of race in university admissions. Arizona, California. Did you know that? California has ended consideration of race in university admissions. So the most liberal state out there has said nope to that. Michigan, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Washington, Idaho, and Florida. So, you know, it's like, hey, you can use income.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't use race.
Yeah, right.
I believe that this will go down. The Democrats might try to make a big deal of it. It's not going to go anywhere. Most Americans believe that race should not be the judgmental factor anymore.
Right. No, I could see it. I could see. Sure. And you could hear in the back and forth of the hearing yesterday, and it's no prediction, but you could certainly hear the concern by a number of the justices with this type of policy. Which, I guess if you've been following it in recent years, you probably saw that it was going to go this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people believed that, yeah, we likely will see affirmative action in these cases fall. And we'll see where it goes from there. I wonder how much it resonates right now with the average person. How much, if it were to fall, how much it would resonate?
I don't think it will.
Because, you know, you look at Roe v. Wade, and there was a ton of noise surrounding Roe v. Wade and the reaction by the left on Roe v. Wade. But step away from the protesters, step away from, you know, I'll say the usual suspects, the people that are, you know, usually on camera, in pictures, holding picket signs, the average American on Roe v. Wade. I think in 2022, when Roe v. Wade fell, I think it was not the impact that it would have been 20 years ago.
No.
And maybe even 10 years ago. And we talk about the abstract versus reality. All right. Abstract is, all right, yeah, well, no, yeah, I believe it should be that way. Well, do you yourself, are you yourself affected directly by this? Is anybody you know directly affected by this or will be anytime soon? Well, no, but if.
You wouldn't even know if you were.
Right. So it's a contingency on this one you may not ever know.
Well, I think it was Thomas asking a question to one of the lawyers saying, and I think this was, forgot whether this was UNC or Harvard saying, well, in the race base, if this isn't necessary, you're saying, how many students does it affect? He said, well, 1.2% marginal difference. He goes, well, that's only minimal. I mean, that's nothing. That's 1.2%. Why do you still have it?
Right.
You know, if this is absolutely imperative and you're saying it doesn't affect 50% of the students or 40%, it's 1.2% of the students. Whether that's true or not, that's the answer that the lawyer had given for it. But
right,
really,
right.
The percentage doesn't matter. It's that United States, you can't use, you know, everything is set up in the system. No preference because of race, except here. That's not going to hold.
Right.
Just not going to hold.
Right.
Now you can use there are other things you can use. You can use income.
Mm-hmm.
You can discriminate because of income.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which means all the rich people should have their college paid for. That's the kind of discrimination that the Democrats are looking for.
Right.
Let's help the rich pay for their college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What has happened in that? I've heard, weren't they supposed to have, because remember, it was a temporary injunction. They were trying to go for a permanent, whatever happened. Remember, the lawyer said they were going to have a hearing.
There was a hearing scheduled for it, but no news out of that hearing.
I've heard nothing out of that at all, nothing.
And I don't know. I'm guessing they don't want to pursue the fight and make it a big deal between now and Election Day on the left. Or maybe it's just taking
If it's in the courts, the courts decide.
Well, what I mean is that do you jump out in front of the podium, you know, if something doesn't fall your way? Because if a hearing often will be you know, it could be something as mundane as, all right, present. I want you to present more data, more information based on this and, you know, whatever it might be. There was the, I do know that there was a deadline for the one case with the states that were involved to come back and appeal on standing, whether or not they had standing right. or make the case for that standing. So often a hearing doesn't really have much news. The judge will say, okay, I want this, and then you can present this at another date, and then it's could be, I don't know, a couple weeks down the road.
If anyone gets standing on it, this is gone. And it's gone based on the EPA decision earlier this year. Or was it late last year? I can't remember.
It was early this year.
Time is just flying by.
On the eviction moratorium, right?
Well, the EPA ruling, environmental protection on the coal.
Right. Yeah.
Which stated you must be, and then other cases have followed this. You must be specific. Congress must have authorized you, and given you specific authority for this.
Right.
It can't be Congress generally said this and you picked out here. And what the administration is using the after 9/11 and saying, you know, and that was specifically for military people and trying to apply it here. You're not going to make that case before the Supreme Court based on the precedent that they set there.
Yeah.
I can't
CDC
see it.
Was the eviction moratorium. And so the question would be then, all right, because ultimately the question is of authority. The executive branch, does the executive branch have the authority to do this on the loan situation?
No.
And the standing, I believe, because this is the AGs in those states basically saying, and I hope it's being presented as such, the American people are the bank. We are the lender here. Because it was said, I think one of the judges said it, that it's different than the private sector, and if the government came in, they wouldn't have the authority to cancel a loan between two parties if one was a private sector bank and all that. Well, but hold on. Who was the bank in this case?
The bank is
the American people. So I think that's where the AGs
need to
make the case.
I would disagree with that. I agree with the concept because I said a couple of days ago, why can't injured parties be the ones that are taxed? Because the precedent of the Supreme Court shows they don't accept that. Even the constructionists don't accept that as damage. But the fact is, if it's taxes from Congress, then I can understand you saying it's not damages, the Supreme Court, but if it's the executive branch doing it, I would hope that they would be able to make that leap and say, well, it's the executive branch doing it. They don't have the authority to tax, and so you are damaging the taxpayer by creating more debt and having them pay the interest on it. Traditionally, though, the taxpayer getting increased taxes, even in executive orders, is not viewed as damage, and that's the problem there.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, when you look at it from the perspective that the American people are the bank, we're the bank how does it facilitate it? Through our elected representatives.
But I don't disagree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the Supreme Court, in so many cases, has not recognized that as damages. It has to be for so many of these cases, individual damage. Now, I believe it is individual damage, but you have to be able to... What the Supreme Court has said is you have to be able to quantify the damage to that particular individual. If you just charge all the taxpayers, what's the individual damage to me? I can't, which is why I think the one guy in Indiana has the best case. Because he said, I'm put into this system where I don't have a choice, and I will have to pay $2,000 of taxes for the debt relief that you give me. I have no choice. It's not like I can apply for it. I'm automatically in, according to the law, and therefore I have $2,000 that I have to pay right now, this year.
But what the argument really is who is responsible for that loan and who has the authority to forgive that loan.
I agree with you. That's where they get to it. But the problem all along has been that hasn't given the attorney general's standing. The standing has to be individual damage. I agree morally with you, and as we said a couple weeks ago, and I said this, I would love to talk to a Supreme Court justice and say, how can you say nobody is harmed by this, and why does it have to be individual
harm? Well, because then you could, if you're saying that, then you set the precedent of saying, well, then the executive branch can come in and spend money like this in the future, and as long as every taxpayer is affected, then there is no one that can show standing in that case.
Right.
So you're setting a precedent to say that the authority does belong in the executive branch.
Now, maybe this case, my hope would be that this case is viewed as differently because it is such, this isn't something that's small. This isn't a couple of million dollars. This is, could be half a trillion dollars. Something like this has never been tried by the executive branch before.
It's not an application process where those who are given the benefit, where they have $10,000 or $20,000, we say transferred, but they say forgiven, from their loan, are having to come up with a hardship. There is no hardship qualifier.
Right.
In fact, the only qualifier is level of income. And someone could try and make the case, well, that means that those people below $125,000 income, they have a greater hardship because they have less income. I don't know that. Because it is an individual basis. There is just reading a story about a guy who makes $100,000 a year,
but that's
and he's going to be retiring by the age of 35.
But that's not the legal thing they're concerned with. The legal thing they're concerned with is, does he?
I'm talking about the back and forth of when you break this case down, where it was all right. Everybody below 125 is going to get this benefit. They didn't design it to say we're going to have an application process where if you had specifically a hardship, you can go and apply and try and make a hardship case for forgiving it. My point is that there are things that are written in to the student loan government loans that our lawmakers did.
There could be
qualifiers anywhere along the way that might get somebody a benefit over somebody else. But the question is, really, does the executive branch have this kind of authority to come in and spend this kind of money and put this kind of debt onto other taxpayers who were not part of that contract? And the answer is absolutely not. They don't.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, that's a story that's been out about the Department of Homeland Security feeding stuff to Twitter and Facebook about, you know, what disinformation is.
Right.
There's a huge problem there that Republicans are going to go at big time. Look, Twitter and Facebook can do whatever they want. But the government can't use or intimidate or collude with those organizations to stifle speech.
Right.
That's where government gets involved in doing it. And believe me, you know, you think about it, the number of things that the Republicans are going to investigate here, whether it's looking at the origins of COVID, which I believe they will, whether it is the Biden administration's, and the Department of Justice and their attempt to influence what is on, again, what private companies put out and encouraging them, intimidating them, coercing them, colluding with them in order to stifle speech. That's a whole different ballgame once the government gets involved in it.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Hey, that's part one of our show. Don't miss the rest. Click part two on our website, redeyeradioshow.com, or Red Eye Radio phone app to hear the rest of the show. And thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio.